Initiate Cower Out Christmas.
Welcome to our bonus Christmas episode, which we really just decided to do kind of at the last second. Title of this episode is A Few of Our Favorite Things. And one of my favorite things is a podcast by John Thorne called Stage Right with John Thorne Podcast.
By the way, Merry Christmas.
Yes, because this is going to drop on Christmas Day. So there's a end of the day present, or maybe beginning of the day present for you. You can listen to a Christmas episode. So another one of my favorite podcasts is called The Fighter Pilot Podcast by Vincent Jello Aiello, which you can find that on iTunes. Interviews a lot of interesting pilots that have had some very storied careers, for the most part in the military, a lot of them military and then private sector afterwards, or just a really long, varied military career. I find that very interesting.
My first favorite podcast was, and I say was because they're not making it anymore. If you guys are listening, why? You never even said goodbye. Hurts. It's called Hello Internet. It's with two YouTubers. I was first into watching one of the guys' YouTube channels, CGP Gray. He doesn't want to use his real name on the internet. And Brady Heron, two YouTubers who got together and decided to make a podcast. And our podcast is a little bit styled after them. At least that was my kind of idea, is like they just talk about whatever they want.
Yeah.
So yeah, they would literally just like come with a list of things they wanted. There's no expectation of any specific topic or whatever, but their sense of humor I like the way they poke fun at each other. Like one guy's like super geeky and into checklists and computers and everything, you know, and the other guy's super into sports. He's a little bit nerdy too, but they were different enough that they would like frustrate each other, and that was always turn into funny debates or whatever. So anyway, I think they made 135 episodes, and then they just never made another one. They never made a last episode where they said, this is our last episode, guys. I don't know why.
Yeah, Rick Beato made that comment on his YouTube channel one time about that was one of his favorite things to watch, was people doing their last episode, their last YouTube channel episode. It's like, just can't get enough of it.
So then my next favorite episode, Brady from Hello Internet, he started an episode with one of his friends. Oh, let me back up. It would have been my favorite podcast either way, but with Hello Internet, during one of the episodes, they decided to say like a random name as if they were talking to someone who was listening, and they just picked Tim. Like, did you hear that? Tim? Again, they threw out a random name, and then it stuck. Like, the next time they decided to talk to their audience, they're like, Tim, you got to hear this, or whatever. And they're like, then all of a sudden they decided on one of the episodes, like, all of our audience members are Tim, apparently. So then they started referring to him as the Tims, as opposed to the listeners.
Nice.
I'm like, so of course.
Which we like, actually have a local tie-in for ourselves, where I think we've referred to you and the other Tims from church,
right,
as the Tims.
Yes, we know, four Tims who all been in the same room more than once.
Mm-hmm. All broad age ranges, but 60-year span or something like that.
Speaking of that, the youngest Tim was a baby when the rest of us were already adults. And one time we found ourselves the three elder Tims, and one of them was holding baby Tim. And we were like, hey, it's all the Tims. We're all here. And then I don't know who started it, probably me, but we started it like bobbing up and down, saying Tim, Timothy, Tim, Timothy, Tim, Tim, Taru. And then I was making up as I went along, my name's Tim, or my name is Tim, and his name's Tim too.
Nice.
So Brady started another podcast with a different guy, one of his like best friends from high school. And that guy's name is Tim. So, again, their content is great. I don't care that his name is Tim, but it just makes it all look cooler for me personally.
Right.
But that podcast is called The Unmade Podcast. Their first episode, they explained what their podcast is about and why the name. They knew they wanted to do a podcast together, but they didn't know what, so they started throwing out ideas. We could do a podcast about this or about this topic, or maybe we could do like this theme. And they realized they had so much fun coming up with ideas, and they couldn't settle on one, so they decided that was their podcast. So every episode, they each bring, I think, two ideas for a new podcast. Yeah. Occasionally, they'll make an episode, like, if we were to do this podcast, here's episode one of it, and they'll actually do it, like,
oh, funny.
You know, top 10, whatever, or, you know, so it's pretty funny. Of course, it's morphed into they have all this other weird stuff that they do now that is part of the show. Another one of my favorites is called Cultish. Almost every episode, they interview somebody. It's a couple of Christian guys. And they interview somebody who was in a cult. Like Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, the Hebrew Israelites. That's another cult. But anyway, it's almost always they interview somebody who was in a cult and has come out and become a Christian. Mm-hmm. It's always really interesting. And one thing I like is that, of course, they come at it as Christians and they want to be, you know, counters, like, this is what this cult believes, and they talk about it. And the guy talks about his experience and how he got sucked in and how he got out and all this.
Yep.
And some of their theology or whatever. But they always end with, what does the Bible say about, because a lot of these cults use the Bible.
Yeah, right.
You know, to push what they believe. And so they point out, like, well, this is how they're misusing that verse, or yep, they're completely ignoring 90% of the Bible, whatever. One thing I like about it is it's really interesting. Like, I could get totally sucked into just learning about cults and weird stuff and just go down a rabbit hole to the point where it would probably be too much and it would be unhealthy. I mean, I've, like, watched documentaries before about weird cults and stuff, and I don't know. It's just interesting to me.
Yeah.
Even though it's, like, weird and creepy and evil, and I'll just fully admit it, it's just kind of entertainment to me. I'm not...
Right.
I just think it's cool and fun. But they come at it and they always, like, present the gospel, like, essentially all other religions other than Christianity and all cults. The main difference between them and Christianity is, in Christianity, God earns your salvation for you.
Right.
In all other religions, you have to earn it. There's some way, some different versions of you having to do something, and you got to do it right. You got to keep working at it and keep working at it and keep working. Anyway.
Yep.
So they always bring in that contrast. Just by doing that, they're kind of by necessity preaching the gospel.
Right.
There's one thing that the more I've matured as a Christian, I like hearing the gospel.
Right.
I don't think it's old and boring, and I've heard that, like, that is really something that, like, I'm like, yes.
It's life-giving.
Yes. Yep. I want to be reminded of it. I want to hear it again.
Yeah.
So they kind of have a good balance of it. They're not just doing this as a, this is like ear candy or something.
Right, right.
Just as entertainment. Cultish is the name of it.
Okay. All right, so Christmas, a few of our favorite things. So most of the favorite podcast was only diverging from the Christmas theme, but it's still a few of our favorite things.
Right.
So favorite Christmas. So I'll go first on this. So I'll say, what was my favorite Christmas and why? There was one Christmas that I can still see lots of images in my mind from, because I wanted, really, really wanted, and I was at an age where I was getting into that. I mean, I was like, I think 12 or 13 probably. And I wanted these pair of speakers that were on sale. So, spoiler alert, I got them for Christmas. And that's why it was my favorite Christmas as a Christmas, or my favorite Christmas gift, most memorable, because I wanted them and I got them. And it was my first real piece of audio gear, real being relative, but they were legit. And that was the start of what's become a lifelong thing and was actually a vocation for a while. And now it's just a Sunday morning habit, a hobby, way of serving, yeah, at church, church, which is doing live sound. I remember that because I can still see it bugging my dad at the grocery store, because the Radio Shack was right next door, going, ah, they're on sale and they're whatever, whatever. And I don't know at all if I just kept repeating the same thing over and over anyway, mm-hmm. but I got them. And I was so surprised in the way they did it. Of course, they're big enough. If they'd have wrapped them and set them under the tree, it'd have been pretty obvious. They had one of them stashed in the garage, and I forget where the other one was. But anyway, that was so memorable because I was so wanted them and so enjoyed it, and it really did start me out on what's been a lifelong thing. And so that one will always be with me.
I was kind of racking my brain. First of all, when somebody asks you what's your favorite whatever,
yeah,
maybe I'm like way too concrete and literal, but I don't like that question because I can't think of, like, it has to be my favorite or I can't say it. What if I can't decide? And then I'm like, I don't know how to answer this. Like, and it bothers me. Like, so I'll say one of my favorite
there you
Christmas
go.
Memories.
Evade that ponder factor thing.
Exactly.
Paralysis of analysis.
Right.
Jason Gay was the first one ever used that phrase around me. And I'm like, yeah.
Oh, Jason.
Yeah, that.
And that's been one of my issues in life is I can't make a decision. So if you ask me what's my favorite, I'm like, I can't nail it down. I don't know how to talk about this. Anyway, so one of my favorite, I can't remember how exactly, but I saw the gift that I was going to get. It was this big remote control car. I don't know if I was 6 or 8 years old, probably. And if I asked, like, what is that? Or if my parents saw me discovering it or something, like, oh, that's for your cousin. And I was, like, heartbroken. I'm like, they got that for him? And I want it? And I was, like, seriously angry and sad and frustrated. And I couldn't believe it. It felt like a stab in the back. Like, they got him the thing that I wanted.
So they told a Christmas lie? Yes. Is that what happened?
Yes. I'm not sure. They might have got one for him and me. I honestly am not 100% sure. I could see them trying to cover it up, though, by saying, that's for your cousin. Like, so it could still be a surprise.
Yeah.
Either way, for whatever reason, it didn't occur to me, like, they might have also gotten me one.
Right.
Somehow, I
asked about this one thing. You told me about this one
thing.
Exactly. That doesn't mean there isn't another thing.
And it was a pattern in my life for a long time to always assume the worst. And whatever would make me sad or mad, that must be the explanation. It couldn't be something good. Like, so maybe that was part of that. And I remember, like, going to bed and just, like, crying and angry and just... And, of course, then we're opening gifts. And I was like, yeah, whatever. What did you get me? Pencils, socks, you know.
some socks, some tiny BVDs. Oh, that's copyrighted. That's Bob Rivers and Twisted Radio.
So we're opening gifts, and I opened it, and there it was, and I was just like, yes! And I was like jumping off the couch and holding on to it, and... So if you want your kid to be really excited, make him super disappointed the night before.
You can only go up from there.
Exactly.
So here's a rando favorite thing, because I've never been huge into Christmas. So I had to think a little bit about this as far as, well, what things pop to mind when I think about Christmas. And there's probably a span of maybe 5 years that I'm actually drawing from when I think about this as far as old enough to remember. And of course, the speaker thing. So that at that age, and then, you know, it's a lot less of a thing as you get to be an adult. One of the other things that I always think of that I believe was only available at Christmas, it's certainly the only time I ever remember seeing them, was a candy. And only because I like binged on them, like it was probably one Christmas, but it might have been two. That is why I'm remembering it. But it's called, and they still make them, by Brock's. It's called Peppermint Christmas Nougats. So they're a round thing. They're peppermints. They got white, red around the outside and a green pine tree in the middle.
Oh, okay.
But I remember getting those at Woolworth's in the, used to be the Brock's Pick-A-Mix. So they'd have like 8 or 10 candies in individual containers. And then you took a bag and pulled your mix out of there. But I remember pulling heavily on those.
Don't have any specific memories as like a kid what my favorite Christmas candy was. But I definitely have one now. It's not like I look forward to it, but it's always a surprise. Like, oh, Linda made fudge. So Linda's homemade fudge. And it's not just that it's fudge, but Linda and I will both do this. I introduced her to like putting real creamy peanut butter on chocolate. I like Reese's Pieces, but there's just nothing, not even close to just a Hershey bar dipping it in creamy peanut butter.
You got chocolate on my peanut butter. No, you got peanut butter on my chocolate. You got chocolate in my peanut butter.
Right. We'll take a little dab of peanut butter, put it on top of the square of fudge, and then nuke it for like 3 or 4 seconds. You can go too far. The kids, when they do it, they put it in a tiny little dipping bowl and melt it into liquid. Whatever, I guess if you like it. I like it to be a little more soft, but so it's warm and a little bit creamier. Because it's a little soft.
Nice.
And delicious. And you got to eat it with a fork, because when you try to pick it up, it's too gooey. So.
And of course, if anybody recognized that commercial, then you know that you're similar to age to how old I am.
Yes, I remember that one.
So another favorite Christmas memory, I believe it was 2009. We were up north at the in-laws, and we got a ton of snow, like overnight. And it was heavier snow, so it was wet, so... We built a, I don't remember the exact dimension, it was over 12 feet tall, but not 13 feet tall, snowman.
Oh, yes. I think I've seen the pictures.
Yeah, so.
Didn't you use some kind of lift or crane?
Yes, I used a bobcat, I think, to get the last layer up on top of there because the bottom ball was like 8 feet in diameter or something like that. But a couple years later, we bested it with a 15-foot one. Oh, I know. So I think we sent in, one of the city stations, TV stations, was asking for photos of snow sculptures because of all the snow that time. And I think I sent in a photo of that one, but turns out somebody had made one that was like maybe just a, it was bigger than that. We're like, oh, really? So that was fun. So that, because the whole family was out there and the dog out there running around in the snow for a long time, rolling these huge balls of snow around. And
right. That reminds me of one winter, or spring, actually. It was a super late snowfall, and so the local newspaper was out taking pictures of the spring snow. And my daughter, oh, she's probably 8 at the time, whatever, was out helping the neighbor kids make a snowman. And so that picture got on the front page of the paper. And so I was at work, and there was a newspaper in the break room. I'm like, hey, guys, look at this. My daughter's on the front page. And one guy says, well, you got so many dang kids. Just statistically, yeah. It's bound to happen.
Right? Our oldest ended up on, I can't remember if it was on the front page or not, but it was a similar thing. We share a driveway with our neighbors, and he was out actually shoveling their driveway, but the photographer from the paper lived right across the street from us, so I imagine he saw him out there, and it's like, ah, perfect, a snow picture, because I think it was right after a storm kind of thing. And so we actually got at least one, I want to say, from like Michigan or something like that, because all the newspapers, they submit stuff to the AP, the Associated Press, which makes it available to all the other papers. Mm-hmm. And there was some paper in Michigan that picked it up and ran it in their paper.
Oh, wow.
And so somebody from there cut the clipping out of their paper and mailed it to us.
Cool. So that actually brings me to my favorite Christmas movie, It's a Wonderful Life.
Nice.
I suppose lots of people can say that. I'll just tell you specifically why, some of the reasons. I remember seeing it a bunch as a kid. And then it was years and years and years until Linda and I watched it. I don't think Linda had ever seen it. Not sure how. Like, it's on TV every year for right. The last 100 years or something. Anyway, I recommend, like, hey, let's watch this. If you've never seen it, we should watch it. And I just didn't remember it that much. In my mind, it was more, I think it's like 15 or 20 minutes of the movie is the part where he's in the alternate, like, what if I'd never been born,
yeah,
part of his life, which shocked me. It's a 2-hour movie, and it's like a small snippet of that. I was thinking it was like the whole movie, you know?
Right.
One thing I like that it's set in the 40s. I like that old stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Lynn and I are super into swing dancing, and oftentimes we'll put on our 1940s style getup that we've kind of pieced together, like mm-hmm. the suspenders and the shoes. The wingtips, and we have kind of matching shoes. I mean, she's got a woman's version of it, sort of. And we love the big band music. I mean, we like dancing to it, but I like just listening to it, too. And, of course, I remember listening to a lot of that kind of music when I was a kid, because that was when my dad grew up, that was popular.
Right.
He was 92 years old just a year or two ago. He was born in 1930, so yeah, when he was growing up, that was the music that everyone was into.
And it didn't change what was hot every other year like it does now.
Yeah, exactly. So I remember walking around as, I don't know, a 5-year-old with a little boombox listening to Glenn Miller.
Yeah.
Just dancing around to it and just like walking around the house with it. And, you know, never would have guessed that I'd be into it as an adult and that Linda and I would both enjoy that dancing to it and whatever. But I don't know. There's just something about the style of the clothes and, call me old fashioned, women dress like women, men dress like men.
Yeah.
Fine, women can wear pants. I'm not worried about it. It doesn't bother me. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think culture is more and more trying to completely erase the lines between male and female. If you get what I'm saying. And it's just been this progression of just.
And if it does look female, it's flaunting female features rather
right,
than, you
yeah,
know,
exactly.
Actually having fabric that goes up near the neckline, you know.
Right, right. And I don't know. If suddenly I woke up tomorrow and the whole culture was like, you know what? We're going to start dressing like the 1940s because that's cool. I would be like, I am right there. Perfect. I would have no problem. I don't know. I think it looks cool. You know, the fedoras and...
Yeah.
And another thing my dad always said when I was a kid, and I never was like, oh, okay, Dad, whatever. But now I kind of see more of his perspective on it, is he would always be bothered when people don't dress up for weddings and at church every Sunday like he did growing up. And he would always say it's a sign of the degradation of society. And my focus was always like, who cares what you wear? Where in the Bible does it say you have to wear a tie?
Right.
Or you have to wear a fedora? Or you have to wear a suit to church?
Right.
Nowhere. But, like, for one example is, when he was growing up, a man would not wear a hat inside.
Right.
It was considered disrespectful. Where that came from, I don't know. But that was the way it was.
Right.
And so, to his dying day, if he saw somebody wear a hat inside, especially in church, that was his man, he was highly offended. And I'm just like, Dad, why does it matter? Well, because that's the way he grew up, and that still meant that to him.
Right.
So if I know that wearing a hat inside is going to be offensive to everyone in the room, and I do it, I'm just being a jerk.
Right.
I'm trying to tick people off. I'm trying to ruffle feathers. It's either for my own amusement or making a statement, whatever. The Bible says...
Paul talks about that, yeah.
Yeah, Paul talks about, like, don't...
If you know it causes them to stumble, then don't do it, because you're not being loving if you know it's going to cause them to stumble.
Exactly,
What are you possibly getting out of it versus how you're harming them?
Right, exactly. And so the way I've seen it, you know, thinking more about it is there are people who are like, I want to offend, I want to change the norms, I want to stand out, I want people to think I'm ridiculous, and then I want to turn around and say they're the ones with the problem.
Yeah.
And so that has changed the culture, not just the way we dress, but the way we think about honoring others and authority and, you know, being respectful. And it's all just going downhill. And so, yes, I get it. So it's a sign.
Yeah.
You know, a kid grows up today, he's never heard that you shouldn't wear a hat in church.
Right.
My kid wears a hat in church. I don't care. Like, but I still have their memory of that used to be disrespectful, you know. And so when somebody like my dad sees a 12-year-old wearing a hat in church, this 12-year-old has never heard that. It doesn't mean that to him.
Right.
But it still means it to my dad, and my dad couldn't get over the fact that, like, that kid is not trying to be disrespectful.
Right.
In his culture, that's not disrespectful.
Right. Although, like you said, it's a lot of it is, some of it is just having any kind of distinction between events, like the thing with dressing up for everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily my thing at all, but I can understand it from a certain angle. If it's not a pride thing, you're trying to make a distinguish the importance of something from one thing compared to another. Everything's not just the same. Not everything you ever do all has the same importance. And I think that's one of the things that's happened with what's happened with cultures. It's like sameness. Everything is just, nothing's distinctive anymore.
Right, yeah.
And it's like, it's sad because, I mean, God is into detail and he's into variety. That's why there's, 10,000 varieties of Black Beatles like Phil was talking about yesterday. It's like, so, I mean, God has a place for distinction, a place for something being different than something else.
Yeah. And again, it can totally turn into legalism.
Yes.
Like, if you don't wear a tie in church, then you're probably not a Christian.
Yeah,
you know, like,
yep.
That's ridiculous.
Yep.
So there's a tension, and I get it. But,
yep.
And I think, like, oh, look, why do people still want to, for the most part, I mean, it's starting to change a little, but want to wear a tuxedo and a beautiful gown at a wedding?
Yes.
Like, because they want, it's important. I mean, part of it's just tradition, I guess. Like, they're doing it because everyone else is doing it. But people want to commemorate that and make it important.
Special. Yeah.
Important, they want it to be special. Yeah.
Yes. To stand out from everything else.
Right. And I broke the, at your daughter's wedding recently, I broke my personal rule that I always wear a suit and tie.
Yeah.
Because it was, I don't know what.
You're just a roadie here.
80 degrees and it was outside and it was sunny. And I'm like, I'm wearing shorts.
Yes.
But because my dad instilled it into me partly, I guess, is like, I'm going to wear a suit and tie. I don't care who else isn't.
Yeah.
Now, I don't do it at church every Sunday because I don't want to stand out that much. But at least it's expected at a wedding. You're not going to look like a weirdo. But anyway, I digress way too much. We were talking about...
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life. So I just like seeing the clothing style And of course, what they have scenes where they're dancing and you're hearing the music. And so I like all of that. But then we would watch it like for the first like 2 or 3 years after Lynn and I first watched it, we would watch it. And then finally, and it was like, do we have to watch it like every year? Like, can we watch, like, not that we weren't watching other Christmas movies, but I'm like, yeah, you're right. We probably don't need to. But so we've watched it a ton of times since then, you know, in the last 20 years or 18, whatever it is. I know you corrected me a little bit last time. Like, your math isn't working out.
Maybe you're rounding up just a little bit. I don't know.
We've been married for 22 years at this point.
Yes, you have.
It's been at least probably 20 years since we've been watching this movie most years.
Actually, I think you might even have told me, because I don't think I'd watched it, certainly not as an adult. I think you might even have told me where I could find it online somewhere. I don't know if it was on YouTube. I want to say, I think that was you, and I think it was that movie.
Okay. But after watching it multiple times, I distinctly remember catching more details. I'm like, oh, I never noticed that the last 3 times I watched it until this time. Mm-hmm. And then I'd catch some other detail that was, like, important to the plot.
Yeah.
Not that, you know, it's like, if you miss it, it's not going to ruin the movie. But they just put so much in there
right.
that I didn't catch, that was purposely put in because it was saying something about the plot or about the message or whatever. But the big one was, so he's on the brink of, like, he's considering suicide, everything's going wrong, he might go to prison, lose his family, lose his job, all this stuff. And so he comes home, and he's like, he doesn't know what to do, and he's, like, in this terrible mood, and his family's like, Daddy's home! And he's just like, this is not the time to be happy and excited. But his family has no idea what he's going through.
Yep.
He's not going to tell them, you know, to ruin their Christmas Eve at that point. And he's just frustrated and depressed and angry, but he doesn't want to show it in front of his family. But finally, he just loses it. Like, every little thing is bothering him, and he's annoyed that his daughter's playing piano, Christmas song over and over, and she can't get it right. And he's annoyed at his son for trying to make him laugh and whatever. And he just kind of has this nervous breakdown, and he turns around, and he sees these little models of skyscrapers that he's been working on, like a little hobby, and he just whacks them onto the floor with his hands, and he starts stomping on them, and then he suddenly realizes, like, I just lost my mind, and then he apologizes to his family, and then he, like, walks out the door and leaves, like, because he doesn't know what to do, and I always saw that scene as he's just frustrated, and he just starts knocking stuff down randomly. But in the beginning of the movie, you learn that his dream in life is to build skyscrapers, is to be an architect.
Okay.
And so at this point in his life where, you know, his life didn't go the way he wanted, and not only did it go the way he wanted, now everything's getting worse. He might end up in jail, you know, whatever, and for something he didn't even do, but he's the boss, and so he's responsible, and, you know. And then he turns and he just suddenly sees this reminder of his dream that's never going to happen. And that's what makes him snap. Like, not only is my life going downhill fast, there's a reminder of what I really wanted in life that I never got, you know?
Right.
I just thought that was a cool thing when I noticed it finally in the movie. It's such a good movie. It bothers me that it didn't do anything for you. Maybe you need to watch it again. Maybe watch the color version. Get the green and red in the Christmas tree then. I know it's a cliche. Everybody says, oh, it's a great Christmas movie, whatever. I don't know. I think it's because it is.
It's not there's just, a reason that people say that. Yeah.
It's not just a fad for people to say it.
Like, right.
Yeah. Oh, I gotta tell you this. So in the movie, a famous line, every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wing. Like, I feel like everybody knows that, even if they've never heard of the movie.
Yeah.
So in the movie, at the end, the little girl is ringing a bell on the Christmas tree. It's this tiny little bell ornament that actually rings. She goes, every time a bell rings, an angel gets its ring. And the mom says, or the dad says, that's right. Because he's all excited because the angel that helped him is now getting his wings. Oh, I remember one other thing that I always noticed about this movie. So there's tons of movies that where supernatural or, you know, paranormal things happen, you travel through time or whatever. And one thing I've noticed is that the characters in the movie just accept them really quickly.
Right.
Like, if that actually happened to you,
no.
Like, you would deny it and say, this can't be happening. It's impossible. It's not real. Am I dreaming?
If Jesus came and told me in person, I'd have to assume I was hallucinating.
Yeah, right, yeah. But, you know, stuff like dead people coming back or whatever, just like, this can't be happening. Oh, well, I guess it is. And then they move on with the movie like this
suspension of disbelief.
I guess, but I always notice it.
Because they got to push through.
Right, yes, I get it. You got a plot to do. But they did it really well in It's a Wonderful Life. Essentially, almost this whole 15 or 20 minute clip of him being in this alternate universe that he doesn't realize he's in yet until he starts and nobody recognizes me. But he won't give it up. He's like, no, my wife, she'll remember who I am. Like, he can't accept that this is actually happening. And I'm like, this is how a real human would react if this was actually happening.
Yes.
And I think they did an amazing job of him just making it so like he can't accept this because it's impossible.
Right.
You know, he tries one thing. I'm like, no, okay, well, let me check something else to try to prove that this is not real, you know.
Yep.
And that little snippet of the movie I think is amazing. Like, it's the only movie that I've seen that I think they did it right.
Yeah.
All right, now, I'll stop talking about this movie.
So now we got the record scratching sound. We go, okay, now to go to the opposite side of the Christmas movie universe. I've seen some memes on Facebook recently about this, like, rinse and repeat, the Hallmark Christmas movies.
Oh, yeah.
But there is one of them that is just enough different or is done well enough that it's a family favorite of ours. It's called The Christmas Card.
Oh.
Ed Asner is in it. He kind of helps carry the movie. And the guy that plays his brother-in-law, the kids love that one, and they still do. And they would randomly quote this, a couple of the lines from there, but that one's well done. But The Christmas Card, that's, even if you despise Hallmark movies and haven't seen that one, you might actually like that one.
I'm going to make a note. I never heard of it.
There's a military tie-in. And,
oh, cool.
You know, which hits a chord for some people.
And this is something I was thinking of saying. Speaking of Christmas movies, I think 99.99% of them are absolute garbage.
Yes.
I have a very particular standard, so this is mostly my opinion, I guess.
It is your opinion. Just like I just voiced my opinion about this Hallmark movie that, you know, in a sea of Hallmark movies stands out.
Yeah, and I want to check it out because I'm always kind of on the lookout. Like, I want to find good Christmas movies.
Yeah.
Not just Christmas fodder. Like,
right.
Let's watch it because it says it's a Christmas movie, I guess. Like,
gosh.
I like The Santa Claus, you know, where Tim Allen becomes Santa Claus. I don't know if you've seen it.
I'm pretty sure I've heard the name, so I know it's a thing, but... Yeah.
We watched that one several times, and it has a sequel, and then they made a third movie of it. They're pretty good. I mean, each movie is not quite as good as the last, but it's a fun movie about Santa Claus, whatever. What I think is a good Christmas movie, it has nothing to do with Santa Claus.
Right.
Obviously, you know,
and it's about... Elf. I know that one's pretty well-liked with...
I enjoy it. It's funny and fun. Yeah.
Will Ferrell. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
But
Home Alone, I know that.
Oh,
that, that really. Which
we watch that one every single year.
That one doesn't do anything for me, but I know there's plenty of people that really does.
Our kids love it. I remember loving it as a kid, so it's a little nostalgia, you know.
Yeah.
Especially like seeing the old Pepsi can, and I can't think of anything else, but old logos that like aren't around anymore because they've changed them, you know.
That was a meme. I've seen that the last few weeks on Facebook where his grocery list of the stuff he goes and gets was like $17.
Oh, yes.
And today's dollars is like 72 or something like
that. You're right. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, fun movies. Fine. There's so many Save Christmas movies, and those are just like, I don't know, like Santa Claus is... gonna be kidnapped or whatever, and Christmas won't happen when they gotta save Christmas. Like, whatever, fine. The kids have watched a bunch of them. I'm not that interested.
or the Madagascar, there's the Christmas Capers.
Oh.
there's one, they do one, and you found Liechtenstein? Lickety what?
But in my mind, like, I have this idea of the perfect Christmas movie, and I don't think it's ever been made. Maybe it's impossible, but... I can't even describe it.
It's a Wonderful Life in the 90s in color?
Yeah, It's a Wonderful Life is like probably the closest. One thing I like about Home Alone, and this is not like the ideal Christmas movie in my mind, you know? Is like there's a lot of Christmas music in it.
Oh, yeah.
There's like essentially no Christmas music in It's a Wonderful Life. Almost the entire movie doesn't take place at Christmas. It starts at Christmas and it ends at Christmas, but the rest in between is not Christmas, which... I feel like if you're going to call it a Christmas movie, at least to have a little more Christmas scenes. Like, it goes through most of his life from, like, graduating high school up until he's got four kids, whatever, you know. So, like, couldn't you have thrown in a couple of Christmases in there? Like, what happened? Just to have a little more Christmas. My kind of ideal Christmas movie would be one that talks about, like, real, true stuff that's important in real life.
Yep.
And promotes that. But do it in a Christmassy way. It takes place at Christmas. Mm-hmm. have a lot of Christmas music in it, not just Jingle Bells and Rudolph, but Oh Holy Night, Oh Come Let Us Adore Him, that'd be cool. One thing I really like in movies are the scenes where they're in church singing a Christmas carol, seeing all the Christmas decorations. And for some reason, Christmas time makes me want to go to some like old cathedral where there's 50-foot high ceilings and stained glass and a choir singing Oh Holy Night or something. I don't know. I get super like, I wish it was the medieval times right now and I could be celebrating Christmas. I don't know why, but I know we go to a modern church and we have the modern music and we don't have any stained glass and we don't have any pews and we don't have any decoration. I mean, we got the scripture up on the walls now, which I really like. There's something, you know. Yeah. I know people associate all that stuff with like dead religion, at least a lot of Christians that, in our world, you know. But like that doesn't equal dead religion, and not having stained glass doesn't equal...
Not dead religion.
Alive, true, vibrant faith. And
it's not the external things that dictate the internal. They can be a sign of the internal, but themselves don't constitute the...
That's like one movie where they have that, and again, it's just like a scene. So I'm like,
Christmas Card has that scene.
Oh, it does? It does. Nice. Okay, cool. I made a note on my phone. I want to watch it. Maybe tonight, if I can stay awake, since I had to work early this morning.
We even have the DVD.
Oh, cool. One movie that has it is The Angel of Pennsylvania Avenue. That's a pretty good one.
That's another oldie, isn't it?
It's kind of old. I think it's from the 90s.
Oh, that's not that old.
But it takes place in the Great Depression.
Oh, okay.
So, but the very last scene of the movie, the family is at church, and they got the candles and the Christmas greenery everywhere, and they're just belting out a Christmas... When I say Christmas carol, what does that mean to you as opposed to Christmas song? Or is there any difference in your mind?
I'd probably first think of a Christmas carol when you talk about Christmas song. So there's not a lot of differentiation.
To me, Christmas carol means it's talking about Jesus.
Right.
Christmas song is Rudolph and Santa Claus and Frosty the Snowman.
All the commercialism.
Yeah, or specifically not Jesus Christian focused, like... And it always bothers me when I say Christmas carol, I think everyone else knows what I mean by it, but apparently they don't. Another movie that we like, that we've watched more than, not every year, but most years, is Patrick Stewart plays Scrooge in A Christmas Carol. Mm. That one's really, really good version. I know there's a million versions of A Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
But this one is really cool. And again, it takes place in old England, so I like seeing all the... old suits and ties and top hats and whatever. And they do a really good job with all of the wardrobe and everything. One of the things he does on Christmas morning, he wakes up and he finds out, okay, Christmas hasn't passed. I can change. I can still do this, right? You know, after the three ghosts visit him. And in this particular version, he goes to church on Christmas morning and he joins in and he's like not sure what to do because he's never been to church or hasn't been in 50 years. And so he's like has to look over at his neighbor's hymnal and because he doesn't know the words, whatever. But again, they're singing Joy to the World or something, And again, the stained glass windows and the greenery and the candles and I don't.
So talking about Christmas music, like I said, don't have this huge fuzzy thing about Christmas. So Christmas music. So a couple of my favorite, I'll say, versions of Christmas-y songs, just for various reasons, not necessarily because it reminds me of Christmas. So it's Little Drummer Boy, but it's done by Whiteheart, which is one of my favorite CCM bands from the 80s and 90s. And another one, because it's so well done in its style and it's just so hits you because it's totally out of character, is Stryper did a version of Winter Wonderland. And it's a huge favorite of our friend Chris. it's kind of over the top in its style for a classic Christmas song. It's on YouTube yet, so we'll have the link on the show notes so you can go to there and click there and see it.
So probably my favorite Christmas carol. And of course, by carol, I mean it's talking about Jesus. And it's old. That's the other thing. If you write a song last year, no matter what it's about, I just can't call that a Christmas carol. Maybe if you make it sound like it was written 100 years ago. Probably my favorite, or one of my favorites, is Oh Holy Night. I don't know. Just read the lyrics at least if you don't listen to it. It captures so much. You know, obviously it's talking about the birth of Jesus. The music is good. It builds and it builds and it gets to this like climax, and then it's like, praise his name forever. The last lines of the song, Christ is the Lord, then ever, ever praise we, his power and glory evermore proclaim. So it's not just about the baby in the manger. Oh, another one of my favorite lines, long lay the world in sin and error pining. Till he appeared and the soul felt its worth.
Yeah.
A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. I mean, do I have to say why that's good?
It's good theology. It's not just
a good song,
but it's good theology.
Yeah, and not just good theology, but like, it makes me happy. It makes me...
because it's true.
It's true, right? And that's something that I've found recently in my life. Like, I used to think of Christianity as like, it's oatmeal. It's good for you, but it's kind of boring and bleh, it's not something you enjoy, but it's good for you, so you got to do it. I was that way for a long time.
Right.
One of the things that got me out of that was John Piper, one of his famous sermons, basically saying like, God made us to experience pleasure and joy.
Yep.
What keeps us from experiencing ultimate pleasure and joy is sin.
Yep.
Temporary pleasure and joy that gets in the way of actual, ultimate, eternal, full pleasure and joy in God.
Yep.
And when I first heard that sermon, I'm like, this is great. How do I do that? How do I get there? And I couldn't get there until, I've talked about it in a previous episode, until God had to show me what I was doing wrong, that I was trusting myself, not him, for all of this. Like, I had to work toward figuring out how to find joy in God. But since then, I listen to sermons or I read scripture verses or I hear these songs and I'm like, this stuff just makes me happy. I like it. It's pleasurable to think theology and hear the goodness of God. And
yeah.
I don't know if fun is the right word. It's not like...
Right.
It's not like adrenaline.
Right. So Christmas traditions, like I said, not a huge fuzzy thing, but there were a couple things when I think about it, that when I think of Christmas, so these are the things that come to mind growing up, is there was a couple of years, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years in a row where before Christmas, my mom would get these ornament kits, and there were a couple different styles. Each year was something slightly different. One year, I remember distinctly, were these different shapes, like a candy cane shape and a ball and a few other things, maybe a snowflake. And the kit came with the styrofoam shapes and then a bunch of pins and ribbons and sequins and different things like that. So, and then directions, what it was supposed to look like. And you would assemble the ornaments. So that's just something that I remember. I know we did more than 1 year in a row. A recent one, and actually this is only the second year we've done it. We had our family Christmas yesterday, is a ball of saran wrap. Basically, he's wrapping objects in saran wrap until you have this big ball of stuff.
Like, and multiple objects?
Yes. and money. And the other thing we did was wrote little numbers, one to however many people are there, and threw those in there randomly. And those went with a gift that was wrapped that was key to that number. And those, when you hit those, you had to pull it out and then pass the ball because only one number per person. But those were, like, I've done some of my photos as canvas prints, and those were a couple of them. So this year's the second year we did it. Everybody liked that one quite a bit. It's kind of fast moving, and everybody's trying to tear the saran wrap off, and we'll make the ball. We switch directions, and sometimes we'll put a piece of saran wrap with nothing. So you're pulling away, nothing, and switches directions, and now you're trying to find the end again, and you pull them before you get to something. So that's probably something we'll continue. That's a lot of fun.
I might mention that to Linda. She kind of came, not, I don't know if she came up with it, but last year she did a game of picking a cup, see if there's a gift under it, and I can't remember all the rules or how it works. But.
Well, Grace was saying, I think that you guys had tried the cellophane ball, but one of the boys cheated.
I don't remember.
And so they don't do it anymore. So I don't know, but...
I'll have to mention
it's like, no knives, this is only with bare hands. But yeah, but that's been a lot of fun.
Cool. So one of my... Actually, this just popped in my head. And this was not a planned thing. We're like, okay, this is a cool idea. Let's do this. And we don't do it anymore. It was just when the kids were little and they don't care anymore. But the song, I Saw Three Ships Come Sailing In on Christmas Morn, on Christmas Morn. It's kind of a weird song. I'm not even sure what it means. But if you listen to the whole thing, it's odd, but
yeah, right.
But it's fun, it's upbeat, it's fast, especially certain versions, and we found a version that we liked, and whatever sparked it, I don't have any idea, but we were playing it, and we had all the lights off, just the Christmas tree lights and the garland lights that we put up, and were on, and we were playing this song, and we kind of cranked it up, and the kids were really little years ago, and we all got in a circle and held hands and started, like, kind of dancing, going around in a circle, and I'm like, hey, let's, every time they say Christmas, we switch directions, and it's like, I saw three ships on sailing it on Christmas morn, on Christmas morn, on Christmas day.
Whiplash.
Yeah, so like it's real quick, you know, and of course when the kids are as littler they are, the less they can do it, you know. So yeah. We're like whipping the kids around and it was just really fun. And we did that every year at least one time for a long time. I don't know, just fun. And again, a bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
Another Christmas tradition, which lots of families have done, but I had never heard of it. Of course, I didn't grow up Lutheran or Catholic or whatever churches have been doing this forever.
Right.
Is the Advent wreath.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't even know what made me look it up, but I Googled it. I'm like, what in the world is an Advent wreath? And I looked it up and I'm like, why are we not doing this? We totally should be doing this. And so if you don't know, it's like, oh.
It's all your fault.
No, this that we're doing it at church this
year.
Yeah. Actually, it's not. This is all from Julie.
Yep.
So when our kids were really little, probably 17-ish, 18 years ago, somewhere in there. But I remember Googling this. I don't know if it was Wikipedia or if that even existed then, but I found this like description of what's the Advent wreath and how you do it and what it means. And I was like, this is amazing. I really like this. I don't care if it's connected with some old denominations that some of us think are dead now. But
yeah.
So you have four candles and going around on this wreath that like lays down flat on the table. And you light one candle on the first Sunday of Advent. And they always do four Sundays before Christmas.
Right.
The next Sunday, then you light the first two, and then the third Sunday you light the first three, and the last Sunday you light all four. And so we started doing this every night at supper. We would turn all the lights off except for the Christmas lights. It makes it just bright enough, but then you light the candles, and then we would read a scripture. I've just went online and found like Advent scriptures or one scripture every day of December, every day of December or whatever. And I've done different things, and sometimes we didn't read the scripture, sometimes, you know. And we always took turns, who gets to light the candle tonight and, you know, whatever. And so, I don't know, I think it's just fun. And we included scripture reading and each candle has a different meaning. And so if you get scriptures that are specifically for Advent, then they go along with that candle. The first candle is hope or prophecy. There's different names, but they kind of are. So the hope or prophecy, prophecies about Jesus from the Old Testament. Love. That's the second candle. The next one's joy, and the last one is peace. Somebody's come up with scriptures that go along with each of those. That's one that I really like doing.
Cool. So another thing that kind of bothers me, and it gets harder. It's like, boy, I don't know how do you answer that one. With I'll say I'm not still not entirely sure where I'm at on the thing as far as Christmas. Pagan origin? Christian origin.
Right.
That whole thing. Well, so one thing that was quite interesting that Jim, we watched it at Pastor's house several years ago, was I guess you'd call it a documentary, and I guess he's redone it since and improved it because he got such a huge response to it. It's called The Star of Bethlehem.
Oh, yeah.
By Rick Larson. And basically what he did, he was a lawyer, if I remember rightly, lawyer or attorney, and the thing about the star just some reason it caught his attention, and he started researching and digging into it, and the Star of Bethlehem, the star that they see, mm-hmm. that the shepherds see. And he had or got software that evidently the movement of the stars is mathematically predictable enough that it can show you what the position of the stars and planets and stuff were at any given time in history.
Right.
And he basically rewound. It's like, okay, what did it look like on December 25th, 6 AD? Because it's something they're all we're off by, I think it's 6 or 3. It was actually planets. I won't even say which one's good. I can't even remember. Anyway, so that if you want to throw that in the pot and stir it as far as if you had questions about, okay, really, is the origin Christian? Is it pagan? Because some of the practices, you know, you can find in the Old Testament about gifts under a tree and all these things. But the Star of Bethlehem, and whether it was that time of year or not, it's like, okay, so what time of year was Jesus born? He posits that because if you rewind the stars to that date, you can see the path of the stars that the wise men followed, that the Magi followed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if I remember right, it wasn't like if for somebody who studies the stars and think they have meaning, the three planets, or they would have thought them all of as stars back then.
Right.
One was like king, a queen, and the sun or something like that. Like, and they all came together so that, okay, a new king has been born.
Oh, right.
Something to that effect, like, if I remember right.
And I think the other thing he points out is that the wise men would have probably been descendants left over from, was it the exile of Babylon, I think?
Hmm.
So these are probably actually Jews or...
Oh, really?
I have Jewish heritage. I want to say it's something like that.
Hmm.
I won't say anymore.
Right.
Because I'll mangle it, but
right.
I just remember it's like it causes you to go, hmm.
Yeah.
But The Star of Bethlehem by Rick Larson.
I just recently watched a video by Mike Winger. Again, I keep talking about Mike Winger, but he always wants to, like, show me the evidence and show me the source.
Yes.
Like, and so he's looked at a bunch of articles claiming all this stuff about Christmas and its pagan origins and blah, 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 whatever. And he's like, okay, show me where did you get this information?
Right.
So they look at the footnotes or the whatever sources, like, this is where I got this. All right, so then he reads that article. Okay, where did you get this? And he didn't stop. He's like, finally, it got to nothing. If you go back far enough, this guy just wrote this and he didn't have any sources.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, that would explain the confusion.
Right, and so what his conclusion was, and I don't remember all of the claims that he was...
Refuting,
but essentially what he was saying was, like, people say this... But you, in order to say this happened 2,000 years ago, or 4,000, or 1,000, you need some kind of evidence. Either some pottery that somehow has something to do with it, or a document, or something. It's like, you can't, like, people want to say, oh, it's been passed down from generation to generation. Like, even the Bible didn't do that. They wrote it down, and they passed it around, and it was always written. I mean,
and they rewrote
obviously
it,
there was...
when it got damaged, because they want to make sure it wasn't misunderstood or misread.
Right, right. But, yeah, you can say, well, like, but where did you get this?
Yeah.
Did this get down, passed down from your father and their father and their father all the way back? Like, how do you know that? Like,
yeah.
So essentially saying, like, sure, something could be true, but you can't say that it was unless you have some kind of historical evidence.
Yeah, cite your source.
Right, exactly. And so what he found out was a bunch of these are just like, they have no sources.
Wow.
Someone heard it and wrote it down or made it up. I don't know. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. They heard it somewhere.
Right.
And this was the first guy that, at least as far back as he could find, that wrote it in an article.
Wow.
And he didn't name any of his sources. Where did he get the information? In the question of, is Christmas, does it have pagan origins? Part of me wants to say, well, if it does, then we should stop.
Right.
But I heard a guy say once, and is it a legitimate argument? I don't know. It made sense to me at the time, and I toss it around in my head still. Is he's like, well, I have pagan origins. God saved me and redeemed me.
Right.
Like, if you're not Jewish, your family history is pagan.
Right.
If you go back far enough.
Right.
Like, now, that doesn't mean, now I know there's... some movements that, like, we want to go to the New Age and try to incorporate that into Christianity. Like, that's not what I'm talking about.
Right, right.
Like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's possibly a tough thing to talk about, like, Christmas trees. Like, well, if some ancient culture used Christmas trees to worship their pagan deity,
right,
does that mean we shouldn't use them now, like, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years later? Maybe, but... probably not. That's kind of how I see it.
There's nothing inherently evil about a tree.
Right, exactly.
And as long as our understanding, especially explaining to our kids what we're doing, why we do this, is specifically Christ-focused and not trying to pull a bunch of scriptures and make up a bunch of stuff about, oh, and this ornament means this and all this stuff.
Yeah,
so
right.
Simply, this is a holiday tradition that we do focused on the fact that Jesus was born. He was born, so you know, according to the Star of Bethlehem, he believes it was December 25th.
But right, yeah.
That, or that's when the star appeared. So some of it really is where does it take you and what you believe, how you live, and especially what you teach your kids about it.
Yeah. One of the things that Mike Winger said, he's like, did you know that before Christianity existed, pagan cultures sang to their gods? So maybe we shouldn't sing.
Yeah, you can really go overboard.
Right. Yeah, there was a video I watched recently. It was the history of music notation.
Mm-hmm.
I think I actually mentioned it to you. The video was called Music Notation Must Die. But whatever. There's problems with music notation. Like, there's no perfect solution, I think, is what he ultimately came to. Like,
right.
People are trying to come up with new ways to record, you know, music on paper. If someone can look at it, it's like there's always problems, there's issues, you can always find a flaw. But one of the things he started with, he said, like, way back, like, the ancient Greeks had a form of music notation.
Yep.
But then when Christianity started taking over, they were like, well, that's used for worshiping pagan gods, so we're going to have nothing to do with it. And they also got rid of the instruments that they used. Like, we're not going to use that because they were so associated with the worship of pagan gods that the Christians at the time, like, we can't use any of this in worship to the true God. Which I get the feeling, like, no, it's not true. My example of it is like, okay, so if somebody gave you a t-shirt with what's it called? The upside down star in a five-pointed star in a circle.
Yeah, the occult.
Would you be like, I can wear this. I'm just going to say that and make up some new meaning for it. I'm like, but no one's going to know that you think of it that way.
Yeah.
And you're going to make everyone think that you're some kind of Satan worshiper or a witch or whatever they think of it as.
Right, right.
I don't know all the specifics. Like, I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
But if it's some symbol that was used thousands of years ago and nobody even knows what it means anymore,
right.
No one's going to associate you or anyone in the
right.
on the planet's going to think, oh, that was used for Satan worship or, like, well, then whatever, it's fine. What you don't want to do is knowingly make people
right.
think things that, like...
Again, like Paul, you cause a brother to stumble. It's like
right.
culture doesn't, in one sense, culture doesn't get to dictate what something actually is. But if culture recognizes something as a certain thing and you know that,
right.
you're probably safer to not go there. It's like, what are you gaining by going there? I mean, and Paul talks about that. It's like you abuse your freedom and to this other Christian who's weaker, quote unquote weaker, to their loss. I mean, what sense does that make?
Right. The one argument that I've always think, well, this is pretty good. Like, is there any harm in getting rid of the Christmas tree? Are we going to somehow suffer?
Right.
Like,
right.
okay.
Yep.
You could go that way. If the way I think of it is like, let's say I went to church on Sunday and all of a sudden everybody's like, well, you know what, guys, we now think Christmas trees are evil and we really believe that you shouldn't have them.
Yeah.
Then I would have to either decide, like, am I going to constantly be in conflict with my Christian brothers and sisters who I dearly love?
Right.
Or am I just going to get rid of my Christmas tree?
Right.
I think it's a really good option. You know, right. Everyone would have to decide for themselves. I'd say, fine, I'll get rid of it. It's not a big deal. Again, like Paul said, like, consider others more important than yourself.
Yep.
Don't make other people stumble. Don't cause division just because you want to have your thing that doesn't really matter.
Right.
And they want you to not have it and it doesn't matter. You know.
Right.
The way I really see the way Christians should behave and love each other, it's like, you should defer to the other person.
Yeah.
Like, well, what if they're wrong? Like, just defer to them. You know, obviously you can take that too far. Like, well, we should allow people to just be in gross sin. That's not what we're talking
right,
about.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And if the other person came to me and like, how should I handle this? You should defer to the other person. Like, whoever I'm talking to. Like, again, the Bible says, consider others more important than yourselves. Put others' right. needs before your own. Sacrifice for your brothers and sisters.
Which reminds me of one of my favorite explanations for humility that I've heard, which is, humble people don't think less of themselves. They just think of themselves less.
Right.
Simply meaning, they're not the first thing that comes to mind when something's challenged or introduced or whatever. It's like, well, how's it going to affect me or how am I going to look? That's the last thing they think of. That's humility. Think of others first.